Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the podcast. This is Real Talk with Zuby. I have got on the founder and the COO of Taste Creators, which is an artist development agency based out in Philadelphia in the U.S. of A. Brianna DeMeo and hey. Watts, welcome to the show.
What up, what up?
Hello, hello.
How are you? Guys,
I'm very well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Sleepy.
Yeah. You had a big night last night or just a busy week?
We've been going crazy, man. It's been just really, really nonstop since 2019 started because we had like a whole month of artist development in January. We did a boot camp and now like we're shooting a documentary and we're about to head to LA this week. And we've literally been in the office every single day doing something. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So to begin with, let's start with what it is that you guys do. When was Taste Creators founded and how would you describe your work?
Interesting. All right. So I think we've actually known each other since Zuby. I think, did you hear of Exclusive Public? Like, did you know me back in those days when I had the other company? I had another company called Exclusive Public that I started probably like 6-7 years ago. Where I was doing like PR and branding and marketing for artists. And then Taste Creators started. It's funny. It's actually, I didn't even realize it's 5 years now that I came up with the name and did the socials and put the website up. But it wasn't a full service agency back then. It was Exclusive Public was the agency and Taste Creators was the music blog. But then, you know, a couple years went by and I met this lovely guy, Watts, that's also on the call. And we decided to just, you know, merge the companies together and run with Taste Creators. Essentially what we do, I mean, we offer a lot of different services for artists and their management and their labels, but essentially we just become the artist team. So we meet the artists where they're at, we fill in the gaps with what they need. A lot of what we do is strategy. We always start with, you know, marketing strategies. We do branding, we do digital marketing, playlisting, PR, but most likely in that order. So it's like, sometimes artists come to us and they're like, hey, I need a PR campaign for my new album. And then we look into them and we see, well, hey, wait, like, what's your actual plan? You know what I mean? Mm. Like, what's the complete plan here, or are you just contacting us for PR and you want that to save the day? So we usually start with like, let's see where you're at right now. Let's make sure the foundation is right, and then, you know, let's move forward however it's gonna benefit the artist. That's how we work.
Yeah. And Watts, how did you get involved with Taste Creators? How did you guys meet up?
Yeah, well, so my 2017 was a bit crazy. I started off in 2017 being on the radio in Philadelphia, having my own radio show in top 40 pop and hip hop on a CBS radio station. And then that station flipped in that January. And so they wanted me to come back and play like adult contemporary music. And I was not feeling, you know, like Gwen Stefani, the soccer moms. I wasn't feeling that whole demographic. So I was like, all right, you know, thank you guys. I appreciate it. I'm going to go try my hand at the music industry. And so I moved back to New York, where I'm originally from, and got a job at Atlantic Records working in the international marketing department. So I was there for about 4.5 months and the corporate life wasn't really for me. It was really cool. I learned a lot. I worked with some huge, huge artists, and worked on those major campaigns across the world. But it just really wasn't for me. I kind of wanted to use those major label tactics and strategies and techniques and bring them to developing underground up and coming artists. I feel like that's more impactful. So I left at the end of 2017, moved back to Philly and was working with a couple artists in the studio, helping them write, helping them understand how their music impacts their brand. And an artist who goes by the name of Joey Kathos introduced me to Brianna in December, I believe, of 2017. And so we met like very briefly. Like it wasn't supposed to be like a meeting. I just kind of came by with the artist, with Joey, and Brianna had a bunch of people at the office, and she said, come back tomorrow. We have to have a conversation. And so I came back, literally, I'll never forget. It was like a Saturday in December, and we talked for like 8 hours straight. We just clicked. So we knew, I mean, Brianna, you pretty much offered, you were like, I need you as my partner. You said that after like a couple hours.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm picky as too. So like, here, is that okay? No, I'm just really, really picky, but like I was at a point where I was a little bit overwhelmed and I knew that I needed some help, but I needed somebody that really got it, that really understood that I didn't have to like train from the bottom up. You know, Watts has a lot of experience. He's worked in radio. He's worked at the labels. I'm not the label person. You know, he's the label guy. I'm the one that's like independent, everything, do this yourself. So we like really meet each other in the middle. So it just really made total sense for him to come on board and for us to really rock together.
Yeah. And then so in January of 2018, we pretty much spent the whole month kind of like building out our services, putting all of the descriptions on everything and really doing that like internal process that you have to start as an agency. And of course, that's always changing. But there was a lot of groundwork, a lot of, you know, foundational stuff we had to lay in January of last year.
Yeah, because it really was a transition. Like I was getting rid of my company and transitioning into Taste Creators, being an actual agency instead of just a music blog. So it was an interesting journey, but it was really, really cool. Yeah. And now it's like we've been inseparable.
Yeah.
Ah, that's awesome. Are you both originally from Philly?
He's from New York. I'm from Philly.
Oh, New York and Philly. Okay. That's awesome. So Watts, one thing that you said there that intrigued me is when you said that the corporate life at the label wasn't for you or didn't fit you. What specifically do you mean by that?
So I mean okay. without
sorry, I'm not trying to catch anybody out here. I'm just I like to dig into things people say.
I think the biggest thing for me was when you work at a label, you know, there's a humbling that goes on when you work there, right? Like there's a huge amount of people that work there. There's VPs, EVPs, SVPs, COOs, presidents, you know what I mean? There's all these millions of titles and structures, and it has to have that because it's a huge machine, right? But one thing I really just didn't really appreciate is how if you're not at a certain level, your ideas are either stolen or they don't matter.
Okay.
And so for me, you know, I came in with a couple of years of professional radio experience. So I wasn't like I came in as, you know, as an intern, or I didn't come in, you know, it's not like my dad or uncle worked there and got me in. I didn't know anybody at Atlantic. I broke into that company. I cold emailed, cold LinkedIn messaged. I was one out of 10 applicants for the job. And I was the only one out of the 10 that didn't know anybody and didn't do an internship there. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm an outsider coming in. I bring a whole new refreshing perspective. And I was kind of met on the inside with, oh, that's not how we do things here. Or, oh, you know, that idea sucks. And then it turns out that idea is the one that they used. And so like, I won't get into too many specifics, but for me, it was just kind of like, why stay here when I am learning so much at the label too, that I can combine my knowledge and take it and do something on my own and be my own boss and be my own, you know, like I felt like
you run it the right way.
Yeah. And I kind of wanted to lead a team as well. And at the label, you're always, always, always obviously looking up to somebody else, always, unless you're literally one of two people at the label who are the people running it. You know what I mean? So for me, it was like, I appreciate leadership qualities and leadership skills. And it doesn't really work that way in a corporate structure in the music industry. It's just kind of like, if you have a lot of plugs and you can make things happen, then they give you a high title. But it's like, they could be a horrible leader and they'll never address it. And I'm not saying this only happened at, you know, and it didn't happen all over Atlantic. It didn't happen all over Warner or all over all the music industry, but just in general, all corporations are like that. And I don't think it's music specific. I think it could have been any corporation that I was at in any other field. It wouldn't have been my style.
Yeah, no, I think companies in general, once they get past a certain size, I mean, before I went into my music full time in 2011, I worked for a company that had like 200,000 employees, you know, so really big company. And yeah, you can get that feeling like you're kind of a cog in the wheel, and the position you're in or the ideas you have, or once something is too big, it becomes really slow to move, right? So you're this tiny little cog in the machine, and you might see something quite obvious where you're like, you know, this thing can be done better. But because of your position or your age or whatever, people are like, no, this is just how we do things. So even if it takes more time, it costs more money or whatever, which you probably could save them, they're just not really willing to hear it. So I can.
That's a great point. Yep.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I despite being in music for so long, I've always done stuff independently, I don't really have that much of an insight into the sort of machinations of a major label. Like, I don't really, apart from the stuff I read or hear, like, I don't really know how it all works. I've never spent any time in that environment. Coming into setting up Taste Creators, like, what was the reason for starting it, essentially? What was the big motivation or spark that made you think, okay, like, this is something that's needed?
I feel like it's different for both of us. So you
okay.
Go ahead. Yeah,
first. Well, I mean, initially, since Taste Creators, like, if we're talking when it first started, it was a music blog. So like, I'm always known for giving artists advice. So everybody was like, hey, you're always giving so much advice, how about you promote some music? So I kind of like threw up the blog, like, okay, cool. But then the reason why we operate the way we do, let me just put it that way, is because we see the craziness that goes on. We see the pay to play. We see the just like the people, the companies taking money from artists knowing that they don't need that service at that time. And that really just, it's annoying to see artists being preyed on. And we just wanted to, you know, they say to bring to the table what you think the world needs. And that's what we did. There were just certain things that were going on in the music world that still go on today that we're just totally against. And we decided to, you know, do it the right way, I guess. Yeah.
What are some of those things? I've got some, which I'd imagine, but what are the specifics of those things that you think are malpractice, essentially?
Well, there's one major one that I kind of want to point out. And Breezy, I'm sure yours are a little more like targeted or specific. But there's one major one that, you know, it's tough because, you know, a couple of years ago, my dream job was to be like an A&R. And now, flash forward to 2019, everybody's an A&R. Everybody has A&R in their bio. Everybody thinks that they know what's best for the artist. Everyone thinks they know what's best and how to make quick plays and how are we going to get this artist here and this artist there. And it's like, well, no one's thinking about like the long-term strategy. So in my opinion, like a big thing for me with starting the company with Brianna in terms of as an agency is, all right, well, how do we instill long-term vision in artists? Because if you're an artist and you have a short-term vision, you're either going to be constantly disappointed all the time and or make really poor decisions financially for your career, because you're going to try to make a quick buck and try to blow up fast, and that's just not how you're supposed to do it.
Or try to sign to a label like immediately,
right? And so there's two things, right? So there's a lot of people out there who are like preaching how to blow up fast and preaching these shortcuts, and that's why, you know, when it comes to, you know, I talk to Breezy about this, like, and it talks to, like, I talk about, like, my social media person, like, I'm trying to be a voice for people that is opposite from what they're getting on social media. There's a ton of people saying what to do, quick moves to make, blah, blah, blah. And I'm always tweeting long-term mentality. I'm always tweeting, build that foundation, make sure you're doing the little things correct, because that's how you're going to grow everything. And that's how you're going to impact your audience. But in terms of more specifics, I think Brianna could speak to more of them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I totally, everything that Watch just said is totally valid. There was just like, yeah, a few other things, you know, I noticed like a lot of artists come to us and they're jaded and we hear crazy stories like, well, you know, I paid this publicist or this company, you know, thousands of dollars and you know, it's like all I got was this keychain, you know. they didn't get anything from it except for a couple of blog posts, which can work if you know how to use them in your favor, and if they're not copy pasted press releases. But I say that to say, like, we just wanted to do things the right way. It's like, we don't want to take an artist's money because they want something. They want to see their name in lights, but they don't actually know how to capitalize off of anything. They don't know how to, like, how they should be marketing themselves. You know, there's no reason why you should be contacting me to do a PR campaign for you if you don't have a marketing strategy in place already. You know, if your brand is not solidified, it's like, what story are we going to tell? Because, like, when's the last time you just clicked on a random, like, blog post scrolling down your timeline saying so-and-so that you've never heard of dropped a music video? Yeah. No, you don't click on it. So it's like, why am I going to take your money for something that's not going to help you right this second? And this is not me, like, bashing publicists or anything like that. It's just, why have an artist pay you thousands of dollars for something that you know that they don't need right now?
Well, it's also different because publicists who are approached with that, with the money, like, they're not also marketers and branding professionals. So like, they're just trained to, like, pitch. So when an artist says, okay, I need a PR campaign, they're just going to do that. They're not even thinking that full 360 about it, but because of Brianna's experience and my experience, we bring very different angles to this. When we first started talking about, you know, how do we set this up? It's like, well, we had to make that conscious choice as a company to, like, turn away money all the time. We've turned away more money than we've made, for sure. It's all part of the long-term plan, long-term business plan, business strategy, but it's also about just doing the right thing. And it's kind of like, there are so many bad people in the industry. It's obvious. It's a music business, right? Like, there's so many people out there screwing each other, moving behind each other's backs, not, you know, not doing the morally and ethically correct things. And for us, it's always been about just do the right thing. We strongly believe in moving organically, and that those good opportunities to us, you know, as a business, to us personally, to our artists, to our team, are going to come if you move in the right way.
I've got this little theory that once you attach the word industry to something, you open the doors for all kinds of shadiness. So, like, food is a great thing. Like, food is awesome. But, you know, the food industry. Yeah, as soon as you're food industry, it's like, okay, you've now opened the doors for all kinds of stuff, right? Like, fitness. That's funny. Fitness is awesome. Fitness and health are fantastic. Like, the fitness industry, again, it's full of, you know, all kinds of people trying to sell you, like, pills or some supplement or powder or do this little shortcut to get a six pack in 2 days, you know, like, all these kind of tricks that people fall for, rather than just being like, okay, look, again, you need a long-term vision. If you weigh 300 pounds and you want to lose 100 pounds, like, I can't do this for you in a month. Like, okay, you need to, like, be looking forward 18 months, 2 years. This is the program. Keep working at it diligently and it'll work. But then you got people come in and, you know, trying to make a quick buck, like, no, like, you know, I'll put you on my 1 month program and, you know, give me this money, and then boom, it won't work.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And there's just so much misinformation out there. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, that's a really awesome correlation or example, because it's like, you know, people go to the gym once or twice a week, maybe every other day or whatever it is. And it's part of their lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
And then you talk about, like, restaurant industry or just food in general. And it's like, you talk about moderation, and then you talk about music, and, like, it's so crazy how people really think that you can just take these shortcuts. And it's all part of the, like I said, the long-term process, and doing, making sure it's part of your lifestyle, right? It's part of the process, part of your habits. And I also feel like, on top of that, in relation to, like, moderation with food, exercising regularly and not trying to take those crazy pills. And then also in terms of music, like, doing the right thing for your brand each and every day, like, that also, I believe, leads to, like, a happier, more fulfilling lifestyle. Because I feel like if you're an artist and you, instead of trying to make a quick buck or try to blow up real fast, you know, incorporate your social media and you're knowing your brand and what you're posting every day and making these moves and setting those short-term goals in terms of, okay, I'm going to release an album by this time, so what do I have to do for that? Okay, I got to do this, this, and this. I feel like that's the process, and that's how you really enjoy it. When you set those you have a long-term mentality, but you set those short-term goals, that becomes a lifestyle. You're really an artist. You're really, like, a human being who's doing something when you set those sorts of, those mindsets.
Absolutely. I mean, being an artist myself, who's been rapping for over a decade and doing it full-time now for, you know, 7 years, is I can certainly understand firsthand the frustration that goes into it, because it's weird, because you've got this balance of needing to be hungry but being patient. Yeah, they kind of feel like they're at odds with each other, because I'm like, man, like, okay, especially once you've been doing it for a while, you're like, come on, like, you know, this is my time. I should be doing bigger shows. I should be selling more. I should be doing that. And
right.
And it's hard, because one of the things you don't want to do in anything in life is be comparing yourself to other people. But in something like music, it's near impossible not to, right? Because you'll be looking at other people. You're seeing other people coming up. You might think you're more talented. You might think, you do this better. You're like, oh, how come this person's got this opportunity that I don't? Why is this happening? Why is that happening? And it's like, it can play on your psyche a lot. And that's, I think, where people start making irrational decisions or throwing money at something that they think is going to be a quick fix.
Yep.
Or whatever. And then, yeah, and I do think there are a lot of people, like you guys alluded to, who kind of prey on those artists who are in those positions.
Pay me $900 for a 15-minute set at South By. Like, what? Your $900 can go towards something else that's going to actually really benefit you.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of misinformation out there.
Absolutely. So what are the main things or the main problems that artists come to you with when artists come to you guys looking for a solution? Is there something specifically that's normally happening? Yeah,
they're always, so they fill out usually like an inquiry form, and so they usually write about themselves, you know, who they are, their social media links, whatever, and then we always hop on the phone with them, because that first conversation over the phone is always more important than going back and forth through email, right? So almost, I would say 99.9% of the time I get on the phone, I say, all right, tell me a little bit about yourself. What are you working on? What are you struggling with? The words, I just need to get my name more out there, are always said every single time. I need to get my name out there. I need to get on this. I need to be more people to know about me. I need to be more focus on me, whatever. And that's always the main, it's never like, I don't know about my music. It's never questionable about how the music actually sounds. And that's usually never a problem that the artists say, at least.
They're like, I need to book shows. I need to be on the fader tomorrow.
Yeah, I need to get my name out there. I would say it's like the quote unquote, exactly what they're looking for every time. Yeah.
That's interesting. So people come to you more often that they want to get their name out there rather than they want to monetize better or make more money.
So I think one of the biggest things that we talk about all the time is we tell artists what they actually need, not what they think they need. Or we do for artists what they need, not what they think they need. So artists, like I said, always think they need to get on the cover of this or get their name out there or just need promotion. And
they really need to set up their sales funnel and their brand.
Exactly. And they need to understand what their brand is. And so a big thing for us is breaking that down. Because if you can't just be a dope rapper in 2019. Everybody's a dope rapper. I'm a dope rapper and I don't even rap. Do you know what I mean? Everybody's a dope rapper. So what's your story? What's your vulnerabilities? You know what I mean? Like it's something that people want to know you inside and out. And if you're not willing to let your guard down as an artist these days, you might as well not even try.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting what you just said there. I mean, even just a decade plus ago, I think it was a lot easier for artists to maintain some kind of mystique or privacy or disconnection.
Whereas now, you still can in certain ways, but there's a lot of artists that just want to live in the studio and not put themselves out there, or they do put themselves out there too much, but they're always promoting at people and they're not actually letting anyone in. They're not letting their fans see what goes on behind the scenes. You know, they're not forming any real connections. So it's you just really have to find a balance.
Yeah, and planned mystique is one thing. What I'm saying is people who don't even understand that they even need a brand. So they're not trying to be behind the scenes. They just don't know why they need to not be behind the scenes.
Okay, gotcha. So they're not making a conscious decision. They just don't know how to...
And they don't know how important it is. So that's why I was saying, people come to us and say, I need PR, I need promotion. It's like, what are we even going to pitch? Because you're just a rapper from Name a City. That's all we have.
Yeah, it's like, what's the story,
Right.
So when you talk about an artist brand, what specifically do you mean by that? How would you define an artist brand?
Well, so brand really comes from a couple different things. So sonically, if I was playing your station on Pandora, what other artists would be on that station? So sonically, what are your either inspirations? Who do you sound like? A lot of artists think it's you know, they say like, I don't sound like anybody. It's like, okay, well, that's not true, because you wouldn't be in the genre if you sounded totally, totally unique. You could take any rapper ever, maybe not the ones that started the whole genre, but even then you can argue that they were starting because of R&B, Motown, and the old soul movement. So, you know what I mean? It goes even further back. Mm-hmm. So sonically it's about, okay, well, what do you sound like? And who were those types of people that would listen to that? And the other thing is, personally, your brand is really your story.
Yeah. You know, your story, I mean? Your message. What do you bring to, what are you bringing to the table? What are you trying to get out there? What are you, you know, just, yeah. What is your story? What makes
what
you,
are you trying to leave? What makes you unique? What's the impact you're trying to leave on your audience?
Yeah.
And if the answer is just good music, that can't be an answer, because everybody's making good music. And also good music is super relative. What's not relative is facts about you. Mm. So if you are born in this city and you grew up with this lifestyle and you were introduced to music this way, and you are always, you know, and you saved up all this money and you put all that money into building your own studio, and then you mastered the craft of producing with the oldest laptop ever because you didn't have money to get, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these intricacies that go into that, and that's what you need to be talking about. That's what you have to be promoting. That's what your brand has to be, because when I listen to you, it's not just going to be, oh yeah, like, this is a cool rapper. It's like, nah, listen to this guy's story. Mm-hmm. And I always bring up, and I could talk about him for decades. He actually performed in Philly last night. The rapper, I don't know if you're familiar, is it be Action Bronson?
Yeah, I've met him.
Oh, okay. Very familiar then.
Yeah, he's cool.
He's always, when it comes to branding, the person that we refer to, because he's not, if someone's listening to Action Bronson, you know who he is, you know he's not just a rapper. You know that has this whole other side, this whole thing that is about him. And that's what it's crazy. That's what his fans really come to see. They don't only come for the music. In fact, most of them know him for not his music.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Jumping on from that, how do you think that... trying to think of the best way to phrase this question. So if you've got an artist who does other things, like, I know Action Bronson is like a chef, and, you know, he does other stuff as well. But I think sometimes as an artist, it can be tricky to understand. If an artist wants to be known for their music, do you think sometimes having a lot of other stuff going on, or having a brand that's almost too strong in a way, can kind of detach from the music, or overshadow it?
The music should always be the forefront, especially if you want it to be, you know. Like, how are your fans going to connect with you? That's really where the brand comes in.
Yeah. I just wonder, because I feel like there are perhaps some artists, or not even just in music, but I think that there are some artists and other people who it almost seems like their brand can be bigger than their music.
A lot
that
of the time,
that can kind of work, but sometimes it might not.
But sometimes that could be like, maybe they just need to put their music out there a bit more in front of everybody's faces. You know, they're, again, balance. There has to be a balance.
Yeah. Or they might not realize that people like their personality and their other things about their brand more than they actually like listening to their music.
Yeah.
Or maybe the live shows and the, you know, the experiential marketing campaigns that they've done are more effective. Action Bronson came to a donut shop Friday in Philadelphia.
Oh,
and he invited fans out. So like, if you don't like Action Bronson's music, but you love his show on Vice, where he talks about food, and you love the cookbook that he put together, and you watch his videos all the time, then you can go to his concert and still get all of that. But that's a different story, because Action Bronson doesn't want his music to be at the forefront. He wants him to be at the forefront.
Oh, okay.
And so that's always the question, right? Like, if you want your music to be first and foremost, the most important thing, then the answer to that is your music has to be incredible. It has to be so good. It has to be so sonically great that it transcends over lots of different fan bases, and it transcends over lots of different ears that wouldn't normally listen to it, or maybe they would, right? Like, people who like certain artists like them. I like Ariana Grande, and I'm not a pop music fan, and I don't like many other artists like Ariana Grande, but I appreciate her music. So it's like, all right, well, how do you, you know, how does that work? If you want your music to be the forefront, your music has to be incredible, has to be totally, totally relatable. It needs to be, like I said, sonically great. But yeah, that's how I think that would have to go.
So when you think of, you mentioned Action Bronson, when you think of artists that come to mind, either within hip hop or outside of it, when you think of other artists that you think have great brands, what are some other examples, I guess, especially like right now?
Well, Drake is a good one. Drake built his own OVO. Drake is a really good example. I mean, having
Cardi B,
she has her own brand of putting up those videos where she's ripping people apart, ripping politics now, and people love that. they want her to speak at like at Congress now here because of her opinions and views. But you know, I'll give you two things. So one, you know, a really good artist where their brand is more than their music, I would say, is Drake, because you know that when you see a picture of Drake, it's usually legendary. When you see a music video, he usually looks like a boss. When you hear OVO or you listen to OVO Sound Radio on Apple Music, it's usually unreleased stuff coming from his producers, and he has his own OVO producing team. So he built this OVO empire where you see the brand with the owl and everything everywhere, right? Yeah. So that's one example. If you think about an artist that's music is their forefront, and the total, you know, where music is always the best part of their brand, Bruno Mars is a great example there.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Bruno, you know his story, you know he's from Hawaii, you know he grew up poor, but he doesn't talk about that all the time. He talks about doing the records. He talks about recording. He talks about the writing process. It's always about the music of Bruno Mars. And of course the look, but the look and the music go very, very hand in hand with him.
So for an artist, so obviously those are both artists with multi-million dollar investment. And
yeah.
You know, so for an artist who might be listening to this, who's like, man, I've only got like a couple hundred or a couple thousand to work with, or
there's also like Dizzy Wright's, you know, Dizzy Wright, Chill Moody. Mm-hmm. There's like, if we actually sat there and thought about it, there's definitely artists on the, you know, mid tier that is very attainable for the little guy, you know, that have great brands.
Okay. So for someone, again, for someone who's listening to this, who is, you know, starting out in their music and is trying to work out the whole branding thing. Like, I think for some artists, the story kind of writes itself quite easily. But I think you've got quite a lot of artists now where, I don't know, they may just feel like I'm a normal kid from this town or this city or whatever. What would be your advice for them to begin to sort of write their story and create their brand? How do you think they should go about it?
I mean, that's a hard question to answer just in a quick podcast.
Sure.
But you really have to take a look at yourself and what makes you unique, what sets you apart. Also, when it comes to your story, the story that we hear a lot is like, especially with hip hop, it's like, oh, you know, I started off as a poet, I was just writing, and then, you know, I met a producer and we hopped in the booth and then everything was great from there. That's how it started. But like, think of the tiny details. Talk about that moment when, you know, you fell in love with music. What were you listening to then? Or, you know, really, like, don't generalize it so much. Really put yourself in that, those moments that made you fall in love with music, and like, talk about it in as much detail as possible, if that makes sense. Just say, oh yeah, well, I, you know, I started writing poetry and then I met a producer and then, you know, no, like,
part of our artist development program we did in January, the first week we spent on branding, and we made it a point, the first two classes, to really break each artist down to the point where they don't know what makes them them anymore. And then we had them think from one class to the next class, you know, over the course of 24 hours before they came back, what's your story? And so when they came back, you know, one of the artists was saying, she was telling us her story about how she got started. And this is stuff that she didn't mention to us the day before when we asked what their brand was.
I know exactly who you're talking about too.
Yeah. And so she was talking about how she grew up really, really, really broke in Miami with her family, watching her brothers and sisters, because her parents were working a billion jobs to get by. And then, long story short, she ended up moving to California and was like doing fashion for Jamie Foxx and all these other people. And then, because she was being in those music circles all the time, she tried being an artist, and she loved it just as equal as fashion. And so there's such an interesting story there, with even Jamie Foxx included in it, that we didn't even know when we asked what the story was. The first day she said that she's dope, no one's like her, nobody makes music like her. And I'm like, okay, well, if I look like you, dress like you, sound like you, what sets us apart? And so I think that's always the question that I think artists who are listening to this should ask themselves. If somebody cloned themselves right here, and they look like me, and they sound like me, and they make the same music as me, and they dress the same way as me, and they walk the same way as me, what sets us apart? And that's your story.
I think that's really valuable, actually. I like that. And I like that because with myself as an artist and with my personal background, I certainly think that I'm like the only person certainly in music, certainly in hip hop, possibly just generally in life, who's kind of got the elements in it, you know, growing up in Saudi Arabia, going to an American school, going to Oxford University, studying computer science, being a management consultant for 3 years, and then leaving that to become a full-time artist. And I, yeah, when you were saying that, I was kind of thinking, yeah, I don't think anyone else can replicate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else can replicate that backstory. You touched a little bit on how artists look. So in terms of visual branding, how important do you think that is in relation to the overall story?
That's extremely important. I mean, you need to look professional online in order for people to take you serious. It is what it is. A book is always judged by its cover in the music industry. And because of that, you know, you have to play the game. So it's like, aside from knowing your story, you know, when someone looks you up, what do they see? Are your photos professional? Are your cover art, your graphic designs, do they look great? You know, do they make you stand out? Does your cover art look like everything that's out there, or is it uniquely you? Is it something that you're bringing to the table? You know, you know, do you have a website that has your bio fully written and professional? You know, all of those things. Are your social media names the same? And are they your artist name? Or do you look like five different people online?
Yeah.
I think on top of that too, and you don't have to dress a certain way as long as what you're wearing relates to your brand.
Yeah, you don't have to create a gimmick. A lot of artists think that you have to create this gimmick. And you don't have to create a gimmick. You just have to pinpoint the things that make you unique, that make you stand out, and bring those to the forefront.
Right. Like, I wouldn't change... If I became a rapper, I wouldn't really change my fashion because my story is still the same. Does that make sense? Like, if I all of a sudden decided tomorrow I'm going to become a rapper, then what I would need to do is still dress the same because that's who I am. And it's who, you know, it's part of my story and what I think and what I believe in and who I am, like I said. But I would need to change the quality of the pictures of me on my social media. And I would have to make sure that my Instagram matches, my Twitter matches, my Facebook. I have a website and everything's cohesive. So there's like more strategic things that artists really need to focus on before they think about buying a $500 pair of Jordans. Like, that's not going to make you stand out.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, you people know you by what they see consistently. So it's like, you know, that those things become part of your brand. If I'm wearing red all the time, which I do, they're like, okay, well, Breezy loves red. That's a part of my brand. And now it's part of the Taste Creators colors. It's like, don't change who you are to try to mold yourself into something. Just be you consistently and pinpoint those things that do make you stand out. Maybe you always wear friggin' trucker hats or something. Like, that's a part of your brand. Maybe that should be your merch now, you know?
That's so crazy to think about, because I'm thinking off the top of my head, so many artists that we know, either we've worked with or that have come through and we've talked with them, that have been told by somebody else to dress like an artist. And it's crazy because now in 2019 with the younger generations, like, you could literally wear whatever you want. And as long as what you're wearing relates to your music, relates to your audience, you could literally wear only $2 dollar store sweatpants and make, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to always dress.
Now, I get it to a certain extent though, because it's like, if 20 people lined up, you kind of want to stand out. You're supposed to look like an artist when you come into the room, but it's not just about how you're dressing. It's your presence in
there. Right. Like, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, it's been interesting for myself as an artist, cause I just feel like as time has gone on, I've become kind of more and more confident and knowledgeable about who I really am, you know, not even just as an artist, just like as a person. Like, I think it can take like decades to really work out, like, okay, what really makes me tick? Okay, breaking away from what I've been told or what I've heard from that person or whatever, like, what really defines me? What really drives me? What do I really think? Like, what's really my authentic self? And how do I present that? You know what I mean? As much as people say, keep it real or be yourself or stuff like that, I think that's actually quite rare. I think it's quite rare because I think a lot of people want to present this image. It's weird because in a way you want to present an image, but at the same time, that image should be your authentic self. It's just like you need to reveal it and display it in a way that
and be confident in it. Be
you. You need to like really own it. It's almost like it's not exaggerated, but I think certainly on stage. I think like on stage, I feel like I'm more me when I'm on stage. Does that make sense? It's like Zuby, but you've like turned the volume up. So yeah, it's like, it's like, this is me. I'm being me. I'm saying the stuff I say. I'm doing what I do, but it's just like, it's just amped up. It's not like I put on a mask and I put on a costume and.
Yeah, you don't have to go out and buy, you know, a Gucci belt and all these expensive ass clothes. And like, if that's not really you,
you know, it's crazy. If you think about big rappers who talk about having those expensive things, right? If you take the Gucci belt off of Travis Scott, Travis Scott's still going to be Travis Scott and make, in my opinion, good music. But he's still going to make the records he's making. It's not like you buy a Gucci belt and all of a sudden you're a better artist. No. So I think for artists coming up, it's like there is nothing that you can buy materialistically that's going to make you a better artist. And there's nothing that you can materialistically buy that's going to up your engagement. Everything has to go through, you know, the organic nature of knowing your story, knowing your brand. How do you relate to that? How do you relate that to your audience and to your listeners and to your fans?
So for artists who are listening to this, if there's one thing that they can do, obviously it's going to vary from individual to individual, but as, you know, professionals who have worked with a big range of artists, what is the one key thing maybe as a general rule that you think artists can do to step up their game, step up their presence, reach that next level, whether that's in making more fans, gaining more followers, doing whatever it is to hit that next echelon? What is it that people are not doing that they should be?
There's a lot of different things.
Okay.
And my answer might be a little different than Watts, but my whole thing is focus on the music, make sure that the music is stellar, and don't put it out to get feedback. Get feedback before you put it out. Mm-hmm. Be consistent. Put yourself out there consistently. You know, don't hide in the studio. Like, okay, really put yourself out there and build your community. I don't care if you have 20 fans. It's like, talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, followers are not fans. You really have to engage with the audience that's paying attention. A lot of artists are just so focused on trying to build a bigger audience that they don't actually pay any attention to the people who are currently following them. When it's like, if they just made some effort and built relationships with those people, those core people are going to be the ones that spread the word about you to others. Yeah. So build your community.
I want to dive into that a little. Mm-hmm. How do you suggest people go around doing that? Because again, artists oftentimes hear phrases like that, or they kind of hear like a very high level view of it, you know, build an audience, build a community, engage your fans. But are there particular things that you think either online or offline that you found to be particularly effective?
Offline, go to events, find different musical things going on in your area, and don't be afraid to go out and show support. You know, some artists won't even show up to an event if they're not performing. And I feel like that's just the wrong way to go about it. You know, you want to, when people can see your face consistently, you're going to make an impact. You know, mm-hmm. They're gonna be like, who's this guy? You know, so definitely when you're offline, make sure that you are supporting others and you're being active in the music community. Go to festivals, you know, different things like that that can, you know, expose you to a bunch of different people. Online, you know, the consistency, if you're consistent, you're going to attract people. People are going to comment on your post. They're going to retweet you, you know, comment, respond to every comment, respond to every DM. You know, when you're on Twitter, retweet people, join in on conversations. You know, it's really just about using social media and being social, you know? And as far as building your community, when you find people that are really, really interested and you see that they're liking all your posts and they're saying, you know, that this music is fire and all that stuff, get their emails, you know? And I know Zuby, you know this, you know, having that newsletter, having someone, when somebody gives you their email, they're giving you permission to market to them. Mm-hmm. So why not collect as many emails as possible and make that your VIP club? You know, that's really, really important. If you have, you know, 1,000 people that are subscribed to you that want to hear from you, and then you sell them all a hoodie that's $50, has made some decent money, you know, by off of just 1,000 people. So it's really, really important to build your community. And the last thing I'm going to say, make sure that you're investing in your marketing. And I don't mean going out and spending thousands and thousands on just like a PR campaign. I mean, like, start small and put $50 to $100 into Facebook and Instagram ads. You know, really start putting money into what you're doing. We have artists that come to us and they're like, yo, you know, I'm like, what's your marketing budget? And they're like, well, I just spent $3,000 on this music video. So what can you do for $200? And it's like, so you have a $3,000 product that you're going to only put $200 in getting out there. If you really think about that, that doesn't make any sense. You know, why spend $3,000 on something that you can't get out there?
It's like buying the finest possible ingredients to make pizza and then putting it in the microwave.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, be consistent and drop music and drop content and communicate with your fans and go out and show love and network and talk to people. But also put some money into those ads, you know, put a marketing budget behind yourself. If you're spending $3,000 on a video, have $3,000 to market it at least. Did I miss anything, Watts?
I mean, the whole music video topic, I could talk about videos forever because I just want to say for the artists listening to this podcast, please understand that the point of a music video is to prolong the shelf life of your record. Do not drop the song and the video the same day. Do not drop the video the day after the song. Do not drop the video within a week of the song because you're competing with yourself. If you drop a video and your song and it's the same song, right? It's the same song with a video the same day. And you say a new song out on streaming platforms. Also check the video out. Just drop today. Right. Regardless of how much money you spent on it, because that's always going to be the painstaking point is you spent all this money on that. Right. Yeah. But now as a fan, I have to decide, OK, well, do I go watch the video or do I stream the audio? Well, the video is a visual aspect. So I'm going to go watch the video. OK, I watched the video. The song's OK. Now, do I go stream it? Well, maybe I don't. I heard the song already for the video. So now you lost out on all those streams, number one. And number two, the people who go look at the streams who haven't had a chance to look at YouTube yet, but they're moving around in their phone and they went to Apple Music and they clicked the link and now they're listening to streaming your song. Maybe they forget your video came out because you put it out in the same day and now you don't get any views. So always understand that the music video is meant to prolong the shelf life. So work the audio, work the record as much as you possibly can. Put the money into the ads, put the money into the campaign, put the money behind that and work that.
And create other unique video content, you know, bring people behind the scenes, show the creation of the records. You know,
and just when the music audio in terms of the streaming counts and in terms of the hype and the buzz around it starts to dip a little bit, you say music video coming out on set a date. And then from that point till the music video comes out, you have all the behind the scenes footage you're posting as promotional content. You're talking to maybe a little interview vlog about you and the videographer who worked on it together, maybe the creative concept behind it. And then by the time that video drops, everyone's going to watch that video, which in turn is going to make people love the song again, and your streaming numbers are going to go back up. So there's a real strategic process to this.
Okay. Yeah, and I see a lot of artists that, what was I going to say? So they pick they might shoot a video for a song that's not even out yet. And they end up picking it just for, like, they don't really have a strategy behind what video, which song they chose to shoot a video for. When it's like, if you're an indie artist and you don't have a big budget, you really have to watch where your money goes, right?
Absolutely.
So why shoot a video for a song that you don't even know if people are going to like the song when you can just drop a couple audio tracks, see what people are gravitating towards the most, and then shoot a video for the one that's doing the best, that's getting the most streams.
I actually don't understand the fascination with independent hip hop artists and music videos. And
get it because we're in a video world.
Yeah,
everybody wants to see a music video, but at the same time, there's so many other ways to go about marketing.
But I feel like also that's starting to change because this video is king, but a music video doesn't have to be the visual content. I would also, Zuby, I'd rather, instead of a music video that you've done, I would much rather see an interview with you, or I'd much rather see you talk about the concept behind the music in the studio actually making it. A really good example of this that we always bring up to artists is he's an American singer and kind of a rapper, but John Bellion. He puts these videos on YouTube of him putting together, creating a song from scratch. They're like 5 to 6 minute long videos. Mm. And from beginning to the end, you learn how the song's created. You learn the meaning behind it. You learn the sounds he used, who was in the studio, who engineered it. Like, it's so intriguing. And you don't need a music video after that because I just watched that and I'm showing it to my friends because, like, yo, watch how this guy makes this song. It's crazy. Yeah. So I feel like you say visual content is still king, but I don't understand the fascination with getting like a bunch of models and like a nice car and like throwing money up. Like, I think the market's heading in the opposite direction to that. I think music videos are going to do them now. They need to be creative. They need to be fun. They need to be
a lot of the low budget music videos just are like you walking down the block or you standing on the corner in front of the bodega, you know, rapping into the, they all look the same. So yeah. It's like,
Sicko Mode's a really cool example of like how to really do a good one because of not just what was in it, but how cool it was edited, how it kind of broke barriers in the way that the video was shaking and editing and lining up with the actual song. So like cutting edge stuff like that needs to be thought of these days. You can't just be putting together the same old throw the money in the air, wearing all this bling. Like that was 2005, you know, this is 14 years later.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because I agree with everything you say there, and I've made it a commitment in my career to never make like a typical generic rap video. Like none of my, I don't have a single music video out of the 20 plus that I've shot, which someone could say like, I've never hired a model for a music video, and I've never posed in front of a vehicle that I don't own. Right? If a vehicle's in my video, it's gotta like be mine. If I'm posing in front of a car, I have to own it. That's like my rule. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because I agree with everything you say there, but at the same time, I recognize that what could be considered very generic, both in terms of music and in terms of visuals and in terms of content, sometimes it seems like it works. Sometimes I look at what's going on in the States and I'll look at, I don't know, the XXL freshman list or, you know, which rappers are popping, which ones are hot, like what's going on. And sometimes I'll listen to it and I'm just like, it's like the beats sound the same. They're not saying anything new. The visuals are totally the same thing. The content.
If you want to go out there and you want to be a clone, that's one thing. But if you're really like trying to bring your own little vibe to the table, then you have to
also
absolutely
also understand that the artists that are on the cover of XXL and the ones that are getting those press usually are the ones that labels scooped up and molded themselves. So that's usually the case where a label's taking an artist that once was original and said, all right, you got to make this music, you got to look this way, we're going to shoot a video, because when the label's covering all of this and you're not paying out of your pocket and
you got to do it there, right?
You're promising and you're signed and you signed a 360 deal and didn't realize what you were doing. That's five
albums.
Yeah. You know, a really, really good example of a non-urban artist is this pop singer Betty Who. She's a female singer. I think she's originally from Australia. And now she lives in LA and she's a pop artist. She was signed to, I believe, RCA for a while, and her albums were always good. She has a good following, but a lot of the songs sounded similar, and a lot of the songs, there was a reason why she had to do ballads, and she had to have something for everybody on her album. She just put out on Friday the first album after getting off that deal. Mm-hmm. And the music is so, you can hear that it's the music she wants to make. You can hear the difference. So the point in saying that is, you know, when you look at these artists, you know, in America that are gracing the cover of XXL Freshman, I would say 9 times out of 10, they're signed to a major and the major's telling them what to do to get them onto the XXL. And so when you look at like where they came from, they may not have been doing the same stuff they're currently doing on the label. They might have done what they've done on Unique side to get them to that point where the label was interested. The label scooped them up, signed them, said, okay, you're going to be this.
Or they did a trolling publicity stunt.
Yeah, well, because in a label's head, you know, they have a certain type of artist. They're not going to push another female rapper at Atlantic when Cardi B put out Bodak Yellow. There was no black female music being pushed out of Atlantic because Bodak Yellow was such a huge hit. So they were waiting. They were shelving all the other artists that were a similar demographic as Cardi. So to a label, most of the time, I don't want to say all the time because I don't want to hurt anybody, but most of the time, the label is looking at these artists when they scoop them up and saying, how can we position them to counteract the other label's version of this? How can we pick up somebody that kind of looks and sounds like Drake, so now we have someone to go up against Drake? Gotcha. So there's always these molds they're going to put you in. So I would say always
with Drake right now.
That's true. I would always say look at how those artists started and look at their brands, how they started.
Sure. So in terms of artists investing in themselves, like I'm a full-time independent artist myself. So I can vouch that one thing for me, which can be challenging and something which I've really had to learn through a lot of trial and error and feeling doing what feels like burning a lot of money in the process, is knowing where to allocate a very limited budget. You know, so you say you've made an album or you've got a single or something, and you've got maybe, I don't know, $1,000, $2,000, maybe $5,000 at a push, maybe, if you know you're 100% independent, to invest in this thing and promote in this thing. I mean, what would your advice be for artists on how to go about allocating that? I know from experience it can be really easy to burn it. To burn it and be like, I don't really know.
Well,
you know,
is that the more you learn how to do on your own, the less money you'll spend paying somebody to do it. So in order to avoid spending crazy, I mean, here's the thing. As soon as you decide to take yourself serious as an artist and really, really do this, you're automatically like you have to invest money into it. You know, labels invest hundreds of thousands of dollars. So on an indie level, no, you maybe can't invest hundreds of thousands of dollars into yourself at once, but that doesn't mean that you should only invest $200, you know? Sure. One thing that you definitely need to pay attention to is graphic design. Make sure that you're visually, everything looks awesome. And that, so that way when, you know, you do reach a new person, they are attracted to whatever it is that you're promoting to the point that it intrigues them to click on it. Another thing that I feel like you get the most bang for your buck with Instagram and Facebook ads. They're the cheapest that they probably ever will be. And if they're targeted properly, that's the key words. If they are targeted properly, you can reach massive amounts of people for a couple hundred bucks. You know, I suggest doing like testing out the waters with that before going to hire someone else to do something for you.
And with those ads, this is quite a specific question here, but I think it's important because Facebook in particular has changed so much over the last few years, and it's become a lot harder to reach people organically. In terms of those Facebook ads, what would you recommend the goal for those ads to be? I mean, is it to go to a website? Is it to click a button? Is it to like the page?
Well, it depends. Usually you're doing some outreach for your music or for your video or for your brand. You might have an ad going out to send people to your website. You might have another one going out to go to your YouTube video, another one going out to just go to your Instagram page. You know, there's many different ways to do it. However, the main goal of it is to reach the people who would appreciate your music the most. Mm-hmm. So that way they can spread it to others. If you have a song or you have a video or whatever, and you get it to 500,000 people, if it's amazing, those 500,000 people are going to start spreading it. And then before you know it, you're at 1 million. Mm. So the whole main purpose of social media ads is to reach a bigger amount of people in a quicker time. So instead of like just a couple thousand followers that are following you, if you do an ad, you can reach so many more people if it's targeted properly.
Do you generally recommend that artists focus locally in terms of geography?
Initially, yes. And that's, I mean, maybe we could talk about targeting ads a little bit just so they understand. But, you know, when you're targeting an ad, you get a couple different options. So I don't mean like just a regular boosted post on Instagram. I mean like actually creating an ad. They let you choose interests. They let you choose areas and they let you choose age ranges, right? Yeah. So you don't want to try to target all of America.
Yeah,
or all in a certain country. You know what I mean? You want to really start small and definitely in your area, right? And maybe a 5-mile radius outside of your area. And then what you do is, you know, you test it out. You do an ad for a certain area. Also make sure that you are targeting a specific age range. Your music is not for everyone. Remember, the point of an ad is to try to get it to people who would appreciate your music the most. So think about how old are they? You know, are they 12 and 13 to 22 or are they 18 to 30, you know, 18 to 25? Are they for an older crowd? Really, really think about that. Mm-hmm. And then once you start doing ads, you'll find the audience that like really works for you. But another way to look at it is pay attention to your streaming analytics. See where people are listening to your music and then do an ad targeting those specific areas.
Yeah, no, I think that's valuable advice for a lot of people there. I've got one question for each of you. Well, maybe no, two questions. I'll do the. So first question is, you guys must both see or hear from or go through like hundreds of artists every week. What is it that makes an artist stand out to you? Is it the music first? Is it the something that makes you want to listen to the music? Is it the story? Is it the photo? What is it for you personally that makes you go, ah, okay, that's worth looking into?
So the energy that an artist brings when they want to work, I think is what you, it's a telltale sign, right? So like if an artist has
instant gratification or long-term
vision. Yeah, I can tell if they have a short-term vision or a long-term mentality right off the first conversation. If they're saying, I had somebody, I got on a call with them last week, and they're wanting to do a consultation, and they emailed me a couple hours after the call, and then they said, can you get me on No Jumper podcast? And I was really confused because we had just talked about having a long-term vision, and they said they understood that. So right off the bat, I don't want to work with that, with those people. Like that's where we talk about like turning down money, because that's where expectations get mismanaged. If you have a short-term vision and you don't at all understand a long-term mentality and how this is a long-term game and how, you know, it doesn't really matter.
You don't want to learn the things that you need to be doing.
and you don't really care about the brand being cohesive. And because
here's the thing, lights.
Artists look at the big artists and they immediately are like, how do I do that? And the whole perception, the whole smoke and mirrors of the music industry comes to an ugly head, right? So for me, the biggest thing that I see that makes me want to work with an artist is the energy they bring to me, which is them saying, oh, okay, well, how do I get my branding right? How do we figure out my target audience?
Sure.
Them understanding that. If they don't understand that, then at least being willing to learn, understanding how important it is. And all of that is, like I said, going into the overall idea of having a long-term mindset. You can't have a long-term mindset and not be thinking about, you know, what can I do right? What can I do right now to get me where I need to be in a couple of years?
Aside from like pay for instant gratification.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
It's like, we can give you a marketing campaign. We can do PR. We can get you on these other different outlets. But the key with us is we're not going to do that until you're ready, until you can really capitalize off of it. But with me, I agree with Watts. What I really look for is like their vision. Do they want instant gratification, or are they in it for the long haul? Do they want to learn more? And then when it comes to marketing an artist, the music is always first in my book. If I'm not in love with the music, I can't possibly send it out to my connects. Sure. I can't convince somebody to love something that I don't love.
In the same stance, I want to also throw in there that it may not be my cup of tea, but it's still got to be really good. It's still got to be really good. Exactly. Like for instance, like Breezy's a pretty big R&B fan. She's more of an R&B fan than I am. So a lot of times we have artists that make like that slower R&B that I have to really, when we talk about music critiques, it's a little bit more of putting myself in an objective space to give that feedback, where Breezy's like, oh, I love this. I got it. You know what I mean? So first and foremost is that we take what we like and what we dislike out of the scenario and out of all the conversations, and we look at it objectively. We look at it as, okay, can this song transcend into
like, will someone else love this?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, will the average listener like this and why? And so I agree totally with that, is the music has to be good. And going back to the budgeting, it's like, you artists, you guys need to be paying your engineers, and you have to be the best dollar that you can spend is on good sounding music. And if your music sounds like crap and you spend tons of money in PR and marketing, those are the people that have tons of followers, and you go to their Spotify streams and they're in the hundreds. It's like, how is that possible? Well, they're paying for their following and their music is getting the short end of the stick.
Because the music is what's going to carry you. You want music that people can, when I press play, I'm going to press play again. So the music is very, very important.
Absolutely. And a last question for each of you is, where do you see things going in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of music? Tricky question. I know we can't predict the future.
Oh, but, in terms of music? You know,
thank God, that wasn't about us. Okay.
No, not you guys.
I wanted it to be about us, actually.
Yeah. But okay, let's say 2009, the way people were consuming music and the sort of overall landscape was quite drastically different, I'd say, to is now, with the rise of streaming and greater use of social media and some of these platforms, which, you know, 2009 stuff like Instagram didn't really even exist, you know? So where do you see, or where do you see things going in the next 5 to 10 years? Do you think?
I don't think streaming's going anywhere.
Okay.
I think how it works on the back end and how the artists get paid and the different deals that they ink with these, you know, with Spotify or Apple is going to change. But people love instant gratification. We're in an instant gratification world now. So I really don't think that streaming is going to go anywhere.
Okay.
And to follow up on that, the attention spans are going to get shorter and shorter. They're not done yet. They're not short enough yet. Like, we're going to get to a point where the average music listener will listen to 3 seconds of a song and decide.
That's why right now it's put out a 15-minute album. Each song is a minute long.
Exactly. So I think in terms of how artists can benefit from shorter attention spans is, you know, two things. One is by doing the right thing in terms of your branding and your marketing and making sure you're giving your audience exactly what they're coming to you for in terms of, okay, well, they like me because I am this way, and this way. I'm going to give them content that feeds into that, right? That's one thing. The other thing is your records have to be fire, and they have to be good from the start. No two-minute intros.
There's no more, like, filler songs anymore.
And albums are
still... Everything's a single.
Albums are still important in some respects, but artists who think dropping just albums as developing artists without dropping singles and doing promotional work for singles and lead ups and rollouts for singles and playlisting for singles, like, you're not going to win. You're not going to win. Why would I go listen to your album if I've never heard a song of yours before?
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Breezy. And
thank you, man,
for being on this podcast. It's been really insightful, and I hope that any upcoming artists or creatives can really take some of those tidbits and run with them to improve their careers.
And if anything, they can hit us up.
Absolutely. Where can people find you online?
Well, they can really go to tastecreators.com, www.tastecreators.com, exactly how it's said. At Taste Creators on all social media. I mean, you can find me on Twitter at BreezyB215.
It's just Watts.
But if you look up Taste Creators, you'll just see all of us. You'll see the whole team.
Awesome. I'll put the links in the show description so people will be able to find it there.
Amazing. Thank you, awesome, man. We really, really
appreciate it. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thanks,
Zuby.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.